folks with those.
So, can you tell me your name?
Yeah, Jeff DeRosa.
Okay, and what are you doing here at the pole?
This season, I'm a meteorologist this year, taking primarily focusing on weather observations, surface-based observations, and the upper air equipment. We have our upper air observations as well. So, in the summer, we primarily focus on flight support. In turn, flight support also turns into research as well, so all that data goes to both communities for the forecasters and planes coming in. So.
So what's special about weather at the pole?
What's special about weather at the pole is, for one thing, how close we are to the weather at the pole. As I was talking to you about earlier, when you have cirrus clouds that are coming in at 6,000 feet above you back home, you'd be watching those same clouds come in at 30,000 feet above you. The cold, for one, when someone asks what the temperature is, we never say it's minus this or it's minus that. We always just say 28 degrees, and everyone knows that we're talking minus 28 degrees, because it's rare in Fahrenheit that we get above zero. Record high all time here is 7.5 degrees above zero Fahrenheit. So it's
it's so actually been that warm.
It's been that warm, and actually last summer I was here, it got that warm. It was and everyone was walking around in shorts and t-shirts on that day, because it was so nice. It was just beautiful, as opposed to the winter when it gets down to minus 107 degrees.
Wow.
So, which is a different story.
So what interests you in doing weather at the pole?
What interests me? Well, what interests me about doing weather at the pole is my meteorology career started on top of Mount Washington, and I've always been into the extreme environments such as the summit of Mount Washington, and then the close connection of the two brought me down here. It's I always wanted to see these really cold temperatures, or feel them, I should say, and this is the place to do it. So I did my first winter down here, and after seeing weather for that first year, you just kind of fall in love with this place and just keep coming back. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that, as someone who views a lot of weather information on from instruments, what is it for you that's special about actually being in these extreme environments? What does that tell you?
Hey, the extreme environments for me, I've always been very fascinated in weather. So when you're driving through the mountains and you hear a weather report from the top of the mountains that say it's 30 degrees colder up there, you know, you always want to hike that mountain to see what that environment is like. And, you know, reading National Geographic and hearing about how extreme the conditions are down here at the South Pole, it's just such a unique thing that you grow accustomed to. And when you get off that plane for the first time, as you felt today, you know, you get off and you just feel that extreme difference. I think it's just that, just how different it is in the rest of the world. It's very interesting. And as a weather guy, you like to mix it up, you know?
Yeah. Do you feel like now that you've experienced these extreme environments, that when you look at a weather chart or a forecast, like you have more of a sense of what's happening?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. It's my experience back on Mount Washington, for instance, when you hear of hurricane force winds, you spend all that time up there in hurricane force winds, you know what people are going through. And now being back here, when you hear about extreme cold weather, all relative, of course, you know, being down here and knowing what that brutal cold is like, you understand what people feel like, even if it's just in northern Florida where it gets down to 50 degrees and people are real cold, you know, you kind of understand what it is on a cultural level that people go through when you feel those extremes. Because when I was down here in the winter, it got the coldest I saw was 108 below zero, and you know, that puts a toll on your body, but it's all relative, you know. Back home when it's 0 degrees, you feel cold too. I don't know if that answered the question, but
yeah. do people affect the weather? So people are affected by the weather, but do people also affect the weather?
People affect the weather, yeah. I believe so. You know, when I go home, a lot of people say to me all the time, "Oh, it's so cold outside," and then they look at me and they say, "Oh, it must not be cold to you." And it's like, yeah, it is, because I'm in this environment now. Down here, when it gets down to minus 60, we don't have the weather affecting It's not making black ice on the roads, and it's not affecting the way the pine tree is having to go dormant because of those conditions, you know. Mm-hmm. So it's all relative, it's all different, and I think people and the environment that you're in definitely affects the weather.
What role does the pole and maybe Antarctica as a whole play in like regional weather and then like world weather?
Well, more for the southern hemisphere, if the Antarctica in general plays a huge role on what's going on, because it's the southern hemisphere's refrigerator, really. I mean, you have in the north, you get obviously the cold outbreaks, but they're nowhere near what they are in Antarctica because they don't have that landmass up there. So the North Pole is not nearly as cold as it is down here. So you have all this cold air being born here in Antarctica and then just infiltrating the Southern Ocean and points thereafter. So, hey.
Why is it so cold?
The biggest reason why it's so cold is because of the lack of water. Geography dictates a lot of meteorology, so when you look at a map of the North Pole and you see very little land mass, you have the sun coming in and warming up that water, and the biggest difference up there is you're sitting on 12 feet of ice, where down here you're on 2 miles of ice, you know, so that sun's energy just gets reflected down here, and so our temperatures just take that tumble, but the water is a huge difference why we're so much colder down here than the North Pole is.
Hmm. And why is it cold at the poles in general?
Latitude.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, latitude
What does that mean? Just because how the sun is hitting it?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, how the sun's hitting it, the sun has to go through a lot more atmosphere to before it reaches the surface here. The angle is much different. Angle plays a huge role. The highest the sun ever goes up here is 23.5 degrees above the horizon, where at the equator, you know, it's right above your head. So just the angles are so much different, and we don't get a whole lot of that sun energy.
So how would you describe, like, kind of a typical weather day at the South Pole?
Cold.
Either in summer or winter.
depending on the time of year, it's much more clear during the winter time. That's why we're here in the first place, because the clarity, there's such little amount of moisture in the atmosphere that the astronomers here can just see clear, very clear. It's much more clear here than in the driest desert and mid latitudes that you'll ever go to, low latitudes. I mean, yeah, low. Mm-hmm. And what was the rest of the question?
And what's a typical day?
Oh, typical day, yeah. So it's always, most of the time it's clear, most of the time it's cold, all the time it's cold. But just clear, calm. We don't get very much wind here. Our peak gust ever is 48 knots. Mm-hmm. And you know, back home you'll get that a couple times a year, depending on where you're from.
And what's your most unusual day at the pole meteorologically?
The one that you're seeing right now?
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, when we get fog in here and we have that very light rime ice that's accumulating outside, that's very atypical. And to see the days that we had right before you came down when it got real windy out, we broke 2 peak wind gust records this last week, both of one of 30 miles per hour, sorry, 35 miles per hour, the other one of right around 30 miles per hour. And, you know, in the real world, that wouldn't be a peak wind gust for the day, but down here it is. It's just not windy here at all.
Wow. Now, someone said that the snow accumulation here has increased because of people's presence here. Is that true, or have you heard that?
Not the snow accumulation, just the way that the snow settles around the station. Oh. So what we'll have is, you'll see right off to the north, it's definitely raising up there, but that's just because of the new station and the way that the snow comes up and settles around where it is. But at the pole in general, no, it's not. It's not accumulating anymore because of our presence.
Oh. So, what was it that first got you interested in meteorology and weather?
Hurricane Gloria.
Oh, really? When was that?
Late 80s, I guess it was. Uh-huh. Just sitting back in Bath, Maine, and my mom turning on the Weather Channel, and there we were watching this amazing storm come in, and watching the branches fall down outside, and then all the big snowstorms we get during the winter, too. Snow was definitely a huge one. I remember when I was in high school doing the, you know, being a weather geek, driving inland to find where the rain snow line was and stuff like that. So just little, I mean, most weather people started off as weather geeks and no different. So
you could say that you like,
so
you could say that you like really love extreme weather in a way, or
not even the extreme weather, just you know, the change is what really gets me, which is why mountain environments really fascinate me, because you know, you have that dramatic change from the surface up to the summit. But you know, just all weather really fascinates me, and I just love that change when I'm out in it. So
do you think just from your experience with working with instrumentation and doing, you know, in-person weather observing, that there'll ever be a time when there doesn't have to be anybody down here at the South Pole doing any?
At the South Pole, it all depends on how accurate people want their information. If a pilot really wants an accurate observation, there'll always be weather observers down here. If the community wants really accurate weather data, they'll always be people down here.
So machines will never be as accurate as
it depends. It depends on what statistic you're looking for. If you're looking for temperature, yeah, if you just have someone down here to knock the snow off the equipment every now and then, temperature will always be accurate, pressure will always be accurate. As long as the equipment is maintained, it'll be good. But then you have certain things like visibility and ceiling, and what precipitation's occurring outside. If you want accurate details on what's going on in those categories, then yeah, you need people down here, and that stuff's pretty important for flights. So I don't see the man station going away anytime soon down here. It just depends on how accurate people want their information.
And what was I gonna do? Something related to that. And also this thing with the elevation affecting how it feels. I mean, I think that's just kind of one interesting example, how a lot of what weather information that comes out, or prediction, also has to do with what is it going to feel like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So. And what you feel like down here is much more... It's more of a presence in everyday life than it is anywhere else in the world that I've been, anyway. And for instance, what you're referring to is the physio-altitude. And down here, our elevation is 9,306 feet. But what that feels like on your body, for instance, today, our physio-altitude is 10,500 feet. And that's because the air is thinner at the poles. And that's what creates that feeling of when you climb a mountain, you have much less atmosphere above you. And here, where we're at 9,306 feet, we'll have that effect of 10,500 feet, sometimes even up to 12,000 feet. It's kind of pressure's version of wind chill, and we, you know, it's just much less atmosphere above you at the poles.
And why is there less atmosphere?
A big reason has to do with the centrifugal force of the Earth's, you know, the rotation of the Earth. Mm-hmm. It's the equatorial bulge, it's called. There's more atmosphere at the equators than there is at the poles. Mm-hmm. And plus, the cold air here really just condenses everything. So there's not, relatively speaking, there's not a whole lot of atmosphere above us as there would be at, you know, anywhere else that isn't the North or South Pole.
Cool. Anything else that I should ask about that you'd like to say about the experience of being a weather observer down here?
Oh, it depends on the season. Down here, I think being a weather observer down here, it's not weather observer specific. It's just once you're here for a whole year and experience that one long day and one long night, because that's essentially what we have. People will ask, is the temperature any different at any certain time of days? And it's like, yeah, it is. It's different in July than it is in January, because that's, you know, we have one sunset, one sunrise. And if you just spend a year down here and feel that whole day progress, you realize how vastly different it is from noon to midnight.
Wow. You know? It really is like being on another planet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, for sure. All right.
So what is your name?
I'm Victoria Sinkovich.
And what are you doing here in Antarctica?
I'm a weather observer.
What does that mean?
Well, our job is basically twofold down here. We work with climatology purposes, so we collect weather data for the record, and then we work aviation purposes. So we help out aviation because they don't have many instruments down here to measure the weather, so it is our job to report to pilots and whatnot what is happening on the surface.
So what kind of stuff do you measure? What kind of stuff do you observe, and how does it work?
We observe cloud heights, the visibility, whether or not it's snowing or if there's ice grains or ice crystals, as well as pressure and temperature and wind.
And how often do you do that?
We do it every hour on the hour. unless there's special criteria that's happening, and then we'll do it more frequently.
So how did you get into doing that kind of a thing?
This is actually very new to me. I have a degree in meteorology, and then I kind of took the research route. So I started working different internships, and I'm working my master's degree, and decided that I wasn't sure if I wanted to stay in the research in the laboratory setting, and applied for this job to kind of get out of that and get away from computers and get back to the weather and get back outside.
So does it give you a different kind of perspective on weather from, you know, the computer?
It does. It brings you back to the actual weather and what's going on outside, where as of everything else, it was more data and numerical.
Hmm. What's special about the pole and weather? Is it related to world weather or...?
I think the pole is just really interesting. There's not much research that's been done here compared to other parts of the world. And I think it's really fascinating because we can't have instruments down here because it's just too cold. So you have to have actual observers.
Wow. But there are instruments down here.
There are instruments. A lot of them are only set up during the summer, and then they're taken down for the wintertime because it gets even colder. But we do have instruments to aid us, especially with temperature and wind and whatnot. So.
And how about the influence of the weather at the pole or at both poles and the rest of the world? I mean, I always hear this, like, canary in a coal mine thing about the North Pole and the Arctic and stuff. Is there a similar
thing? Is it more
of
a global warming perspective?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I've heard, that it's, you know, things happen sort of faster or more prominently at the poles, and then they spread to the rest of the world. Is that
something? I think it's just easier to observe at the poles. You don't have so much of an influence. We don't have, you know, the human population down here to kind of have that factor. It's just more natural. So that really helps, and it's, the air is very clean here, and I think it's just, it's really good just to take data. And plus our data goes back to the 1950s, so we have this continuous data stream, whereas in other parts of the world, you have weather stations that have moved. So it used to be in the middle of the field, but now it's next to a building, so the data's been slightly contaminated.
Right. And so what was it that first got you interested in meteorology and weather?
Wow, it goes back to grade school. I can't really pinpoint an exact experience. I've always liked physics, I've always liked math, and I knew I wanted to stay in that realm, but I also love being outside. So I figured putting them all together kind of led me to meteorology.
It seems so kind of intangible to me. Does it seem that way to you now after studying it, or?
There was a while when I looked up at the sky and saw equations rather than big puffy clouds. So I'm glad that finally went away. But it's really interesting.
Excellent. Well, thanks. Oh, and let me get your name.
Victoria Sankovic.
I think I got that at the beginning, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
So, tell me your name.
Katie Koster.
And what are you doing here at the pole?
Doing meteorology, so going outside and doing weather observations.
How would you describe weather observation?
Well, here, it's to support, primarily, there are two reasons. First is to support the air traffic in and out, and also to create a continuous record of weather data through time.
And, what kind of special skills do you need to be a weather observer?
I think you have to be... I'm not a meteorologist, although weather is a passion of mine.
Oh, shit. What? Wait. I totally forgot the mic.
Oh, yeah. Should I look at you or look at that?
Yeah, whatever. Victoria was looking, and Jeff were looking at me, so that's
okay. Good, I like that better.
Yeah, I think it makes people more relaxed. So, you were saying the special skills that you need to have to be a weather observer?
Right, so I'm not a meteorologist, but I think you have to love weather, obviously, to come here at all. And also, you have to have a lot of attention to detail.
What do you love about weather?
I love that it changes so quickly, and I think a lot, it impacts all of our lives every day. Like, the moment you wake up, you think, oh, what am I going to wear? Am I going to wear a sweater? Do I need a t-shirt?
Hmm.
But a lot of people don't think about it.
When did you first realize that you were going to be interested, that you were interested in weather and you were gonna...
When I was 12.
Oh, yeah? How do you do that? That's pretty specific.
Yeah.
What happened?
I went in the summer. My parents and I went on a vacation, a family vacation, and we drove up to the top of Mount Washington in New Hampshire. And there's a weather observatory there. And that, I knew I wanted to go there, and I loved weather, and
wow,
I wanted to make it a bigger part of my life.
And so
I finally got to.
What's special about doing weather at the pole? What's special about the pole, do you think?
It's crazy. I mean, how, when you told people you wanted to come here, how did they react?
Some people thought I was crazy, and some people thought it was really cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. So few people get to come here.
Mm.
It's such a special place, and the community, I also like the community a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The people here are amazing, and they really come together and work together and...
Hmm.
In incredible ways.
It seems so, yeah. Have you noticed anything, like, just because you've done weather observing at Mount Washington, I guess, right?
Yes.
So what's different about doing it here, you know, besides, like, being here and...
Oh, this is, you know, what's really different here is the clouds. They're, since we're so high, the clouds... We're closer to the high level ones. Because we're really close to the high level clouds, they
mm-hmm.
look different. I'm having a hard time judging their height from the surface of the ground.
So the you
because I have to keep reminding myself that we're at 9,000 feet and
right.
the clouds are so much closer.
So there's certain kinds of clouds that only live in the upper atmosphere that you're actually closer to here.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
And then generally, the different low, middle, and high-level clouds generally have characteristic shapes.
Mm.
Hmm. Generally.
And what do you think about the whole thing of the automatic weather, the relationship between the automatic weather instruments and... your observations and your readings?
I love that we're here, because I'm sure some people, I mean, a lot of the National Weather Service sites in the States are automated, but I really think it takes a person to look out the window and think about whether the machine is, whether the instruments are giving you the correct reading.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that there will ever be an instrument that can do everything
that can make our jobs obsolete?
A human can do it. Yeah,
I hope not. I hope not.
I mean, I guess my question is, what senses come into play when you're doing weather observing? Is it just visual, or is there more to it than that? Because I notice, like, a lot of, even today, like, you guys were kind of debating, well, should this be this or should that be that?
Right.
And so like, what plays into those decisions?
Well, I think there's a moment of, for me, when I go outside to look, there's a moment of quiet where I just go and take everything in. And the instruments, clearly they can't think and
mm-hmm.
don't do that, so they, I guess it has more soul than the instruments can provide.
And somehow soul is necessary for understanding weather or understanding how people experience weather? What do you think?
How people relate to it? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
For meteorologists, for mathematicians, physicists to explain it, maybe not.
But
everyone to relate to it, yeah, you have to take a minute and step back and look at what's going on.
Can you just say that again? Because I think that's really great. I think what you're trying to say is that the instruments can be very helpful for scientists and physicists and mathematicians to explain the science, but to truly understand it as a human being, the instruments are not. Is that really what you're trying to say? You think you could say that?
I don't know.
It's really good.
Well, I think that's part of why people come here to the South Pole, is that we have this special respect and special relationship with weather, and why people want to come here in the first place is to experience it. So just observing weather through instruments loses that aspect.
Okay. Is it anything else?
So hokey.
Say? Anything else? Was it?
No.
That wasn't that hokey at all.
It's true. Great.